This is Boston Public Radio. I'm Adam Riley. And here with me in Studio 3 is Michelle Wu. Fresh from working on Elizabeth Warren's triumphant Senate campaign, she's decided to run for an at-large seat on the Boston City Council. Michelle Wu, thanks for being here.
Thanks, Adam. I'm really happy to be here.
Good, good. Let's, at the outset, talk a little bit about what the work was that you were doing for the Warren campaign. What was your role?
I started out as a field organizer in Boston. This was right after my classes ended at Harvard Law School, but before graduation, I was already taking my time to organize half of the city of Boston and eventually stepped into a role leading statewide outreach to communities of color.
So was she a professor of yours at Harvard Law
School? She was. I had Professor Warren in my very first semester there for contract law.
How was she as a teacher?
She was amazing. You think of Harvard Law School and the Socratic method, and she has basically perfected that. We had a classroom of 70 to 80 students. She would call through 30 to 40 every single class, incredibly sharp, really made sure that we did our reading.
I've heard that she's pretty intimidating, right, in the classroom, intimidating presence.
She knows her stuff, and she makes sure that you know your stuff, too, and that you're well-prepared for class.
When you say that you started out organizing half the city of Boston, there's been some debate, as I'm sure you know, in the wake of her win over Scott Brown, over who deserves credit for the huge, huge pro-Warren turnout in Boston. And I know there was a Boston Globe story that sort of suggested that the mayor was the one who deserved credit for getting people to come out and vote in massive numbers for Warren. But I remember going around on this on Twitter with, among other people, Bill Forey, the editor of the Dorchester Reporter, and he was arguing that having Barack Obama topping the Democratic ticket was the sort of primary factor leading to all these votes for Warren. Now, obviously, there's another possibility, which is that Warren herself deserves credit. So what's your theory on that? I don't know if you've wrestled with this in the wake of her victory, but who gets credit for all the votes in Boston for Warren?
Right. Well, what I can say, it was a lot of pieces coming together. The Warren campaign started very, very early because Senator Warren was committed to doing the grassroots outreach, meeting people face-to-face. You know, as far back as the February caucuses before the Democratic State Convention, she was already in every single neighborhood organizing people.
Yeah, I remember that.
It just felt like the momentum kept going faster and faster. It was great when the mayor's team came on board, as people started coming out and volunteering in higher numbers. And I remember on Election Day, we were just flooded with volunteers. It was people who had been there, you know, since the beginning, coming in and volunteering, people who just lived around the corner, saw the office, and wanted to do their part for even just 1 hour. Really incredible, the energy that we saw.
When you were doing outreach for the Warren campaign among communities of color around the state, was it ever difficult to sell her to people, given that she's a white woman from Cambridge who teaches at Harvard Law School? Was it ever difficult to convince voters of color that she was a candidate with their best interests at heart?
I think voters in communities of color, as you know, in all communities, really care about where people stand. And with Elizabeth, it was an easy sell. She wanted to talk about working families and how there was an imbalance and families really had been disadvantaged and the system wasn't working for people who were working hard. And that was a message that sold well, you know, all across the state. I think with my work in communities of color, I really grew to appreciate how much people would jump in and help when they felt like the outreach had been done and they had been heard and they really had a stake in what was happening.
Just so that listeners get a full sense of your background, you've also done some work for Mayor Menino. Can you explain what it was that you used to do in the mayor's office?
Yeah, I worked in the mayor's office on two major initiatives. One was to streamline the restaurant permitting system. As I had opened a restaurant in Chicago between college and law school, so that's something that's near and dear to my heart, and also had the chance to work on food trucks in Boston.
So what was your role working on food trucks? Because I know we've got a sort of slowly evolving, I shouldn't say slowly evolving, I don't mean to insult the work the city is doing. We have an evolving food truck scene here in Boston. What did you do exactly to help that evolve?
Yep, I helped launch the city's first food truck challenge, which was a competition to put three new businesses on City Hall Plaza. It was a very public process that really tried to engage people in the community. So we started with business plans from a lot of people who wanted to start food trucks, some existing, some just from scratch. and had public voting, had a public taste test, and in the end brought three amazing, amazing food trucks to vend on the plaza.
Who ended up getting those slots? Did Mama Goose get one of them?
Yep, Mama Goose was one of them. Clover was another, and the third was Banh Mi.
Right, right. I wish, I have to say, I've eaten at Clover and it's fantastic, and I've eaten at Mama Goose and it's terrific. I've never tried Banh Mi.
You really should. I'm particularly proud of Banh Mi because they were one of the businesses that started out as just a concept on paper at the beginning of the Food Truck Challenge. And because they were able to land that spot on City Hall, they really brought that idea to life. Now they have multiple trucks and they're opening a brick and mortar restaurant too in Cambridge.
I know you're not working on this anymore. You've got other things to worry about. But is there any way that we can get a little more food truck activity in sort of the Brighton, Alston area? Because we've got nothing over here. And I actually remember communicating with the people who run Mama Goose, sort of begging them to find a way to get to WGBH headquarters. Will more neighborhoods, do you think, in the coming years see more food truck activity?
I certainly hope so. And I'm happy to put in a call and see if they'd love to do some private catering for you over here.
I don't know if that's inappropriate use of our interview to lobby for you know, greater food truck service for WGBH. You are running for an at-large Boston City Council seat, even though you are not from Boston and have only lived here a finite number of years. I'm also a transplant, but I'm wondering why you think you are ready to represent the entire city of Boston, given that you're a relative newcomer.
I'm running because I love Boston, and I really believe that city government is a place where you can make a difference. It's a level of government that's closest to the people. You have a direct and concrete impact on people's lives, and you see the people that you're representing every single day. And I'm ready. I threw my hat in the ring because I want to have those conversations. I'm excited to be working hard and getting out into all of the neighborhoods and talking to people.
Have you had any pushback from people, whether it's elected officials or just constituents who say, you know, Michelle, with all due respect, how long have you lived in Boston? Is it 8 years?
I've been in the Boston area since 2003. I've lived in the South End now for 3 years, was in the North End for a year before that.
So has anyone said to you, you know, Michelle, what are you doing? You haven't been here that long. You should wait a little while, get to know the city a little better. Or have people not raised that objection?
The response that I've gotten has been incredibly positive, incredibly encouraging, and I'm just really grateful. Would love to give a shout out to everybody who's been supportive of me so far. It's been a wonderful experience. And I think, as we were talking about before, voters care about ideas. They care about who you are, why you want to do this. And as I've been having those conversations, I've been really, really blessed and grateful to be having a great response.
You're listening to Boston Public Radio. I'm Adam Riley talking with Michelle Wu, who is a candidate for an at-large seat on the Boston City Council. What are the issues you think you would like to focus on if you win election?
Two of my top priorities are innovation and inclusion. So Boston is a leader in innovation globally. You know, we have a dense cluster here of universities, research and teaching hospitals, giant tech companies, and also just growing startups. And my priority is making sure that we're supporting that innovation. We're doing everything we can to leverage that global leadership position we have, while also making sure that that connects to the neighborhoods. Everybody in Boston should have the opportunity to participate in that, to benefit from the economic growth from the Innovation District. And I'm really excited to build those relationships.
On a concrete level, what can be done to tie Boston's innovation economy into neighborhoods where it doesn't really currently have much of a presence? I mean, obviously right now, the quote-unquote Innovation District, the South Boston Waterfront, is the focus for the mayor and for others. But as you alluded to a moment ago, you don't see much innovation-focused activity in, say, Roxbury or Dorchester or Brighton, where we are right now. How can that be done?
Right. I think the goal is to open up conversation and establish those connections. So how can we encourage people who are in the Innovation District who have great ideas to want to help the neighborhoods, whether that's developing an app that will help some of our students in the schools in Hyde Park, or bringing a need that the South Boston Community Health Center has and exploring how new technologies and the energy in the Innovation District can help support that. Innovation is essentially bringing new ideas to reality that help fill some need. So if we can expand those conversations to the neighborhoods, really make, you know, areas like Brighton, East Boston, West Roxbury feel part of this innovation economy, I think that's it'll just make the entire city more vibrant, a more exciting place to live. And I think another important step of that is connecting the Boston Public Schools to the innovation economy as well. How can we make sure that every student that comes out of the Boston Public Schools is prepared to step into some of those jobs, should they so choose, that they are aware of the opportunities in the new innovation economy, that they visited some of these companies before and understand what it's like to be an entrepreneur?
Would that require just creating additional avenues for exposure, like trips to trips to innovation-focused companies, or would it require some sort of new curriculum, equipping students with skills that they might not currently be getting that would allow them to work in this sector of the economy?
It's making sure that we have quality education for all of our students. I think science, technology, engineering, math, so-called STEM education is key, but really making sure that all of our neighborhoods have good schooling options. And so families want to stay in Boston and participate in the education community and connect that to the innovation community.
When we were talking before the segment began, you shared that you're about to turn 28, right?
On Monday, yes.
Happy early birthday.
Thank you.
But even though you're still in your 20s, you're the guardian of your younger sister, right, who's a student in the Boston Public Schools. She goes to Boston Latin, correct?
Yes, she's in 10th grade.
Would you be willing to talk a little bit about what your experience of the Boston Public Schools has been, and also to the extent that you're able and comfortable, talk about how you came to be your younger sister's guardian?
Sure. Education is a very personal experience for me, obviously, because of my sister and the fact that I've basically been a mom to my sister for the last 5 or 6 years now. It was 5 or 6 years ago that my mother started to come down with some pretty serious mental health issues. And as the oldest child in the family, I wanted to make sure that my youngest sister still had the same opportunities and the same support that I had growing up. So I became her legal guardian, and she has been in the Boston Public Schools now, and we've experienced everything that that means for families.
So what does that mean for families? What's your experience been?
She is loving where she's at now. We're really lucky to be at Boston Latin. Before this, she was at the Elliott School in the North End, another great, great school. So there are amazing opportunities, amazing schools in the system. The school assignment process is complicated. And we've also had very personal experiences with busing. My sister Tori would get on the bus in the South End to go to school in the North End. And for us, that's a 10-minute drive on a good day. But on the bus, it would consistently take 45 minutes to an
hour.
And she would be, 20 minutes late to school every day, as would a lot of her classmates.
So what do you think should be done in terms of the way student assignment works? This is, I know, it's kind of a perennial subject of conversation, but the conversation has heated up in recent months. Counselor Connolly has been especially active in talking about alternatives to the status quo. Do you think the status quo works for the time being, or do you think things need to be changed, maybe even substantially, in terms of student assignment?
We need an education system that works for all families in the city, and that's families that are currently in the school and families that are making the decision on whether or not to stay in Boston. I run into people my age all the time who love the city, want to stay, would be very civically engaged, but choose to move out to the suburbs because they want to start a family and want to look at education options in the suburbs. I think school assignment is a complicated process, and it has to be a conversation that involves all of the key stakeholders. So that's parents, that's elected officials, community groups. Everybody should be at the table, and it's a matter of balancing the need to have quality schools for every single child in the district, and also the financial questions that are involved, the original impetus of busing, and working to have a solution that includes everyone.
I don't want to stay too long on the school question, but as I understand it, the big debate right now is whether to privilege localism or whether to privilege choice. Is that a fair synopsis? And I mean, some people, I think Councillor Connolly fits into this category, say for schools to get better, for all the schools in the BPS system to be good, what we need to do is have kids go to school closer to home so that their parents and their families can take an active interest in the education they're getting. That's how schools will get better. And then people who are maybe in communities that lack a high concentration of high performing schools say, no, we don't do that because then you're going to be denying us access to the good schools that are available in the city. I don't know if I've synopsized clearly or fairly, but if that is the choice, what's the right way to go? Is it time to push people to go to school closer to home, or does choice need to be maintained, even if it means, you know, long bus rides like the one your sister had to deal with?
Right. There are a lot of moving parts to this question. And I think the key pieces are that every child needs to have quality school options, and parents need to feel able to invest in their local school community. And I think that requires more predictability in the process, more information, and better support, more richer conversations between the school community and families.
The big story in city politics in the last couple of months has been Mayor Menino's health problems and his, you know, long hospital stay, and now his rehab stay at Parkman House. Some people, myself included, thought it was asking a lot of the mayor to run the city full time while he was in the hospital, while he was recovering. The mayor himself obviously said, this is no problem. I can run the city from my hospital bed. So did Stephen Murphy, the council president, who's just been sworn in again as council president. He seemed to have no issues with the mayor doing that. What was your take on that whole situation? Did you find it plausible that Mayor Menino was going to be sort of running the city as effectively as he usually does while he was recovering from this litany of illnesses?
I've seen firsthand from my time in City Hall how much energy the mayor has, how much he cares about the residents of Boston, and how great of a staff he's surrounded himself with. I didn't notice any interruptions in city services in that entire period, and I haven't heard from anyone who did.
One of the points that you've made in your nascent candidacy is that right now there's only one woman on the Boston City Council, Ayanna Pressley, mm-hmm. who, like you, is from Chicago. Mm-hmm. Why do you think it is that the Boston City Council is so male-heavy, especially at a time when other elected officials from Boston are, I think, you know, that there's an increasing female population. You know, people like Sonia Chang Diaz, the state senator, or Linda Dorsina-Forey, the state rep. And yet the city council, for some reason, has become this sort of male redoubt. Why is that?
I'm not sure. And, you know, certainly this is an issue that I care about and that we see not just in Boston, but everywhere. You know, now we have 20 female U.S. senators, which is great progress, but still a long way to go. I am excited to be putting my name out there and representing not just a women's perspective, but that of a former small business owner, a legal guardian. And I really believe that so-called women's issues are not just restricted to women. You know, I think all parents struggle with the worry of, is your child getting a great education? How do you balance work life, professional and personal? And the more we can have those conversations, whether they're brought forth by women or men, the better policies we can come out with for the city.
I have been speaking with Michelle Wu. She's running for an at-large seat on the Boston City Council. Michelle, thanks for joining us, and hopefully we'll get a chance to talk to you again.
Thanks so much.
Continues. Good luck.
Thank you.
Well, back in April, when Mayor Menino challenged the city of Boston to collectively lose £1 million, there was some excitement and some skepticism. So how is that working out? So far, we are just 1/10 of the way there. Not so good. But in Fitchburg, they're winning the Battle of the Bulge. So what do they know that we here in Boston don't? Their mayor, Lisa Wong, might just be the might just be the person with the key. And Kelly Crossley will be bringing you that story next on Boston Public Radio. I'm Adam Riley. This is 89.7 WGBH.